are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, contributing editor to the nation's London Bureau, Maria Margaronis, on the upcoming elections in Greece. She may also have some information to add on the terror attack in Paris on the Charlie Hebdo satirical magazine that killed 12 people, three masked gunmen, we will discuss in a moment. Meanwhile, in this country, a bomb set off out in front of an NAACP office in Colorado. Meanwhile, Speaker Bonaire withstands a rebellion, the largest since the Civil War in terms of numbers, in terms of against a Speaker of the House. And Republicans plan an attack on Social Security. The White House issues a Keystone XL veto threat. And Governor Bob McDonald, he of the vaginal probe, ends up heading to prison for 2 years. And theories abound as to why he has fallen. Remember, this is a guy who many people thought was the front runner for the 2012 presidential elections at one point. I mean, probably back in 2010.
Even more recently than that. I mean, he was a finalist, right? He was on Romney's shortlist.
As a VP?
I think he was right up there.
Very possibly. Pat Robertson has a very good explanation of why this guy fell so hard. Now, remember, his wife is scheduled to be sentenced in 2 months. But we will get to that. In Paris this morning, unbelievable video and sound of an attack on the Charlie Hebdo offices. This is the satirical magazine that in 2011 had featured a cartoon of Muhammad, the Muslim prophet, that a satirical cartoon that caused it to receive death threats. And subsequent to that, an attempted firebombing of their offices. Now, it's being reported in a lot of places that this is Islamist terrorists. It's also being reported that they you could hear them saying, Allahu Akbar. But these were three masked individuals with AK-47 assault rifles. There are some reports that they were using a rocket-propelled grenade. Apparently, now the attackers have escaped by car. They remain at large. So it really is, in my estimation, allegedly Islamist terrorists. What is clear is that these perpetrators wanted it to be known that they were Islamist terrorists. That doesn't necessarily mean that they were. But by all accounts, this magazine, which we should note, has had rather, I mean, arguably offensive cartoons of not just Islamic icons, but also all religions. So let's, I want to play this. It's really just, it's sound. There is a, there is video to this, but it's basically two of these attackers, apparently as they fled the building. My understanding is, and it's difficult to get information at this point, but they were stalking and they actually went into the building and were looking around for these people. And it was a day in which there was an editorial meeting. So just about all the journalists associated with this magazine were there. When they came out of the building, they shot a policeman and went up to the policeman as he was down on the ground and basically executed him. Here is audio and video from that. So what you heard there was these two attackers getting out of their car, firing at the policeman being on the ground. The attackers come up. In most of the videos, they've at least, you know, paused and dropped out that moment where they went up on the policeman and shot him in point-blank range. And then they ran back into their car and drove off. So we don't know the identities of the individuals or the groups. It's unclear all of the victims' identities. But again, they include at least one police officer and it's believed editors and cartoonists at the magazine. And it's going to have, I mean, I would imagine, political implications in France. I mean, there is, you know, within Europe right now, across Europe, there are sort of new fascist movements that are gaining strength. And we're going to be talking in a moment to someone about what's happening in Greece. But that's certainly an issue in France as
just,
well.
Just to add a really quick thought about that, I'm sure our guests will get to this, but in France specifically, what's so disturbing is that the neo-fascist party has really, like, they've rebranded themselves enough where they could, where things are going already, actually win the next election. Mm. And there's no doubt that, like, you know, horrible incidents like this will play to it. And they've kind of traded the anti-Semitism for anti-Muslim politics.
Right.
And they, I mean, you could really actually see them winning and governing, you know, a major country. It's kind of stunning.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the contributing editor of the Nation's London Bureau, Maria Margaronis. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar, the Majority Report on the phone. Joining us from London is the contributing editor of the Nation's London Bureau, Maria Margaronis. Maria, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sam.
So I want to get to what's happening in Greece, but before we do, obviously a major attack in Paris this morning,
yes.
And we still have three armed gunmen at large. It's the identities of whom are unclear. It's being presumed in some quarters that it is Islamist extremists, and part of that, of course, is because of Charlie Hebdo's past in terms of their satirical magazine and that they've been a target in the past. But give us a sense of, I mean, if there's any information that you might be getting over there that we might not, but also contextualize this. What could be the potential implications of something like this?
Well, obviously, it's really a terrible, terrible thing. It feels very close from here, not only because it's in Paris, but because this is a newspaper. And, the first thing you think of, obviously, is the people and the families involved. But also, my concern is that this might, A, further fan the flames of Islamophobia in Europe, but also be used to further restrict everyone's civil liberties in the name of preventing terrorism.
And you know, my sense is that broadly speaking, this is a particularly since the 2008 financial crisis and perhaps even just perhaps a little bit past that as it begins to be absorbed into the fabric of Europe, that this is a particularly, a vulnerable time for Europe in that respect.
It's a very vulnerable time because the response to the economic and social and political crisis in Europe has been the fragmentation of mainstream politics, both towards the left and towards the right. So we have the rise of far-right parties in many European countries. We have xenophobia and, you know, episodes like this do encourage those far-right groups.
What are the chances? I mean, it's the National Front in France.
Yes.
I mean, what are the chances that the National Front could actually, get into a position of power?
I think slim. I think in France, very slim. But it's not. I think the effect of the rise of the far right in countries like France, which are pretty stable, is more that they push politics to the right. For instance, in Britain, even where we've more or less got rid of the extreme right British National Party as an electoral force, we now have the United Kingdom Independence Party, which is also a xenophobic party, but in a polite form, which is pushing the mainstream politics of the Conservative Liberal Democrat coalition much more towards an anti-immigrant stance.
And broadly speaking, and we'll turn to Greece, but broadly speaking, when we see the influence of these far-right groups on the politics, are we also seeing influence of left-wing groups? In other words, are we seeing sort of like the right-wing's politics of nationalism is not necessarily in conflict, direct conflict with the left's influence of some type of economic populism?
No, it isn't always, because part of what both wings, if you like, have in common is at the moment a kind of anti-European or anti-EU or anti-EU policy, to be more exact, position. I mean, to come to Greece, the left party Syriza, which is leading in the polls and which is likely to win the election on the 25th of January, is very much not an anti-European party. And in fact, watching the speeches of the Greek leaders at the beginning of the election campaign this weekend, I was struck by how much Alexis Tsipras of Syriza now sounded like the European. He referred to Spain, where Podemos party has been doing very well, which is another anti-austerity party. He spoke of Sinn Féin in Ireland. So what we're seeing is an attempt, really, by these left parties to change the nature of Europe back to the ideal that some of us had some years ago, that it would be a Europe for the people rather than a Europe for the banks, if you like.
All right, so let's talk about Greece. Just give us a little bit. I mean, I think most people are somewhat familiar with what has transpired in Greece since 2008, more or less, but and particularly in the last 3 years. But give us a sense of just how desperate things have been in Greece, and what measures have been imposed upon them by the European Union and, I guess, really ultimately Germany.
Yes, and also by the IMF. Well, Greece has seen a complete economic and also political collapse, which began with former Socialist Prime Minister George Papandreou calling for a bailout from the EU and the IMF, which came with the imposition of a fierce austerity program, wage cuts, pension cuts, tax rises, and people in Greece have really had their lives turned upside down. And I'm not just talking about working class people or poor people. I'm talking about the middle class. We now have an unemployment rate of about 25%, close to 60% for young people. The whole way Greece feels and the fabric of the society has changed. And the two mainstream political parties, New Democracy, the Conservatives, and PASOK, the Socialists, which alternated in power really since the fall of the dictatorship in 1974, have completely lost people's trust. PASOK has tanked to the point where it may not even scrape into parliament in the next election. New Democracy is currently in government in coalition with PASOK, but it's lost the people's trust almost completely.
And just to explain to people, I mean, the when these austerity policies, just explain to us of the dynamic in which these austerity policies were forced upon Greece.
Well, the dynamic was quite simple. You either impose these policies or you don't get the money. And successive Greek governments also imposed these policies in the most inequitable way, not wanting to discomfort their own political clients, because we've had a long tradition in Greece of jobs for votes, of favors given by politicians. So the cuts, for example, that were made, that instead of making restructuring the public sector, we've had wage cuts across the board. We've had layoffs of some of the most vulnerable groups, school caretakers, the cleaners of the Greek finance ministry who clean all the tax offices around the country. So that's also been a source of great resentment, that many people in Greece would agree, almost everyone would agree, that reform is necessary. But instead of reform, we've basically had cuts.
And of course, the leverage point here is that Greece does not control their own currency. So there was no way for them to devalue their currency to basically pay their way out of this.
Right. There's no other way to get out of this except either by leaving the euro, which the majority of Greeks have always been very reluctant to do because the consequences have been very unclear and frightening. Potentially frightening. Greece is a net importer of food, of oil, of all these things, which would become very expensive if Greece were to leave the euro, or to either go with this program or renegotiate it. And I think what's happened now is that because of a general shift in the political climate, where austerity is now being seen as a failure, not only by the left, but by very mainstream economists, it's become much more possible for a party like Syriza to say, well, we're going to renegotiate, we're going to play hardball with the Europeans. It's a risk, obviously, and there is quite a big scare campaign going on to suggest to the Greeks that if they vote the wrong way, they might end up in terrible trouble. But this is a moment where it's beginning to seem possible to do something different. Not just in Greece, but across Europe as a whole.
Well, I mean, what is that? What is that terrible trouble? I mean, I'm curious. It's like you're looking at 25% unemployment rate, 60% for youth. Like, what is? I mean, I get the idea that, like, you know, it's you could be going from the frying pan into the fire, as we say. But
yeah,
like,
well,
what is that fire that
what is the fire? It's a very good question. I suppose the fire is a sudden hard default, ejection from the euro, having to revert to the drachma, and, you know, then not being able to import food and energy. But it's looking increasingly unlikely that that would happen. And the other trouble, my biggest worry, is that if Syriza does come to power and then things go badly wrong, then what happens? And that's the cliff, the possible cliff that I can see. But I have a feeling, having watched these speeches over the weekend and seen where the energy was, and really having seen how far Syriza has come in terms of coming up with coherent policies, being willing to negotiate, to moderate its tones in the right places, talking about reform, talking about ending corruption, I felt much more positive after that. And I feel like that's the way the wind is blowing. And I think that even the Germans will recognize that.
I'm curious as to the sort of the overall sense of austerity in Europe. I mean, I recall in 2011, being on different pontificating panels in our media where people would say, like, well, now we have a perfect experiment. We're watching austerity in Europe. We're going to know in the next year or two whether this works out. And I remember specifically being asked, do you think that we're going to take a lesson from that? And I remember saying, no, of course not. Not if it doesn't work out. We'll never hear anything about it again. And to a large extent in this country, you hear very little about the perception of the austerity policies, whether or not we're in a point where it is the conventional wisdom has shifted.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. But having seen the effects from close up, you know, you either look at the numbers or you look at the people. If you look at the balance sheets, Greece is now running a primary surplus. The economy is beginning to very slowly turn around. But the social and political effects of this have been completely devastating. We've had the rise of the neo-Nazi party. We've had the collapse of, you know, people's lives, families, etc. You know, what price are you prepared to pay to make the numbers look right?
And I guess you're also, when you talk about 25% unemployment, you're subsidizing. I mean, these surpluses are, and these cuts, obviously the cuts that have come to the social services, have all been basically extracted from the population, right?
Absolutely. And like, if you look also at where
we could balance
bailout
the budget
money,
anywhere if we all went into a line and emptied our pockets and just and put it towards the balance sheet.
We could. And if you look at where the bailout funds are going, only something like 6% of the money coming in is going to finance current government spending. There's another 6%, you know, actually going into the country, and the rest is all going to service the debt, the loans, the recapitalization of the banks, and so on. So very little of it is actually feeding into the real economy.
So is the concern that exists, you know, with those people who are threatening with, you know, bad things will happen if you if you elect Syriza, is the fear that is promoting or instigating those type of sort of vague threats or warnings, is the fear about Greece, or is it fear that it will act as a contagion and it will spark sort of a movement that may go next into Spain and then from there, who knows?
I think in terms of the noises that are coming from outside Greece, particularly from Germany, even from François Hollande in France, I think you're absolutely right. It is very much a contagion, but it's not anymore the financial or economic contagion that was feared in 2012, where the thought was that a Greek exit from the euro would destroy the single currency. I think it's much more of a political contagion. I think it's the idea that, you know, if Syriza wins in Greece, then who knows what might happen in Spain, Italy, Portugal, Ireland. And there is talk, you know, of an international debt relief convention, of restructuring the debt for all of Southern Europe.
Interesting. And let's just touch on just briefly. I know you mentioned it, but in the event that Syriza is elected, how much time do you think they have until things until they get judged and they are given some time by the population. Because then the next question is, once you've tried all those, all you have left now is sort of the, I guess, these fascist parties.
Well, yes, I think that, that immediate danger has more or less passed in terms of once Golden Dawn were arrested and about to be tried and so on. But to answer your question, I think in terms of the money, it's difficult to say exactly. Syriza themselves say they have enough money to keep going until the summer, whatever. But quite a lot of debt repayments start coming due in February. In terms of the politics, they will have a honeymoon period for sure, but they've also promised a lot to a lot of people, which will be difficult for them to deliver in terms of jobs back, in terms of covering food stamps and free electricity for 300,000 families and all of that. They've raised tremendous hopes because people's despair, it's hard to describe if you haven't sort of seen this once very cheerful people really kind of sink into this gloom, has been intense. And so there will be very high expectations, and there also will be a lot of carping from at Syriza from the left, that it's not going fast enough, that it's not doing enough. So they're going to have to manage this very carefully and very well. But I think people also know that this is kind of the last chance in the known universe. A lot of people who I've talked to when I was last in Greece in November would say, well, you know, we'll try them too. And you feel like this is it.
Right.
This is the moment. And if we can't do it now, if we can't change now, if we can't clean up the corruption, end the sort of jobs for votes system, turn around the economy, get people out of poverty, then this will go on for decades.
Wow. All right. Well, the election is January 25th. Maria Margaronis, the contributing editor to the Nation's London Bureau, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, appreciate it.
All right, folks. So there you have it. I mean, it's we have no further information, as far as I know, regarding what's happening in Paris. Again, this attack, 12 dead, was an attack on a Paris satirical magazine. It is presumed to be perpetrated by Islamic terrorists who are as retribution for the magazine's satirical treatment of Muhammad. But, you know, as we've said, three gunmen remain at large. We don't really know who they are. They seem to take quite a bit of care to hide their identity, which I would imagine anyone would do in that type of situation. But it is stunning to watch that type of and there's, like I say, there's a lot of video of, or at least a decent amount of video of this attack taken by people who seem to be on the roof. I mean, most of it seems to be when they were exiting the scene. So people had heard explosions or gunfire head to their roofs and took video footage from there. We're going to end a little early today for our Anon members. If you want to join us in the funner half, as it were, wherein I will be talking about Republicans' attacks on Social Security. We've highlighted this. There has been attacks on Social Security disability for some time by the Republicans. And we've seen over the past couple of years, you know, these reports on how the disability fund is supposedly rife with abuse. Not the case. How it is running out of money is the case, but also there's a very easy fix, or at least there has been 11 times in the past. And this is going to be the focal point of the Republican attack on Social Security. Meanwhile, better news, the super train in California from L.A. to San Francisco, they have broken ground on a high-speed rail, 220 miles an hour, that will make the trip from Los Angeles to San Francisco in about 2.5 hours. About half the time that it takes to drive. Really amazing in many respects. We got a lot of other things to talk about. So we're going to head into the second half of the program. A reminder, it is your support that keeps even the first half alive. If we had no members, well, let's face it, if we even had half the number of members that we have, even if we lost a quarter of our membership, I don't think we'd be able to do this show. So, at all. So if you have the ability to support this program, join those people who have and are supporting the program for everybody. You can be part of that. And as a bonus, what we do is we give you extra content every day, or it can be your primary content. Maybe you don't like, maybe you might find I don't like interviews as much as Sam, Michael, and Matt talking about stories, sometimes being amusing, other times maybe not so much.
Brilliant sales job here.
Well, I'm just,
I
don't want to oversell.
Talking about Social Security.
That's right. I don't want to oversell anything.
You are in no danger of overselling
I don't like
anything.
To, I think everyone who is familiar with me on this from this program know I don't like to oversell.
I would sort of like to put Sam in different historical moments of like zealotry, like having him be one of the early Christians as an example. Like, yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty good. It's a revelation.
Listen,
I think it's better than what was before, but I don't want to overstate it.
Let's just say that God really appreciates this guy. I'm not going to go as far as to say that he's his son. Let's just say that God really, really appreciates it. Very close.
He's supportive of his work. Will you like everything he says?
Very,
maybe
close.
Not. Maybe you will. Oh, you want to throw me to lions because of my beliefs? I can handle that.
That's right.
Not optimal, but I'm able to do that because I'm as convinced of this as I'm going to be convinced of anything.
All right. If you also, if you enjoy coffee, as I do, and I say this without...
That was some conviction right there.
I'm drinking some of it right now as I speak. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the link. Buy your Amazon crap from there. You can bookmark that link. You will never notice a difference, but we will get a kickback. Suck it, Jeff Bezos. I mean, with all due respect. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. Or you can IM us through the app at majorityapp.com. Majorityapp.com. Or you can IM us at Majority FM. Don't forget, give us a review or a rating on iTunes. Takes you 3 seconds. Well, I don't know. Probably takes you 3 minutes. 120, 180 seconds.
Just enough to note your displeasure about how many times.
Yeah, you can drop the stars, or you can say, right. You can say, like, Sam's okay.
Sam's like, that is such a good review.
All right, we'll be right back. She's a pretty little dog who says no, 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 no. Just a little dog, and she knows I love her so. If I ask her to walk with me,
makes her happy. She's a pretty little bomb who says no, 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 no. All the that time through she says no, 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 no. If I ask her to walk with me, why can't she ever see?
Say no.